Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's The Grapevine on WISL 1040, 92.1 FM. And I saw a photo from Glenora Wine Cellars, part of their Glenora Gazette, showing a big pile of boxes being shipped. And a lot of wineries around New York State are shipping wine. Some of them are doing bottle sales, sort of curb service at the wineries, but very easy to get them shipped to your door and enjoy some delicious New York State wine. And as I've said a lot of times, there's so many different wines available. It's pretty amazing. You can get mead, and several wineries do that. There's quite a bit of fruit wine available. There's, of course, native grapes and French American hybrids and vinifera grapes and just downright obscure grapes too. It's pretty cool how many different wines you can get, and might as well experiment with them. A lot of people get stuck on one or two wines or one or two varietals, and you know, they're just always consuming Chardonnay or maybe Merlot or Pinot Noir. And, you know, I guess if that's what you like, it sounds boring to me to constantly have the same wines. I mean, generally the food that we eat is different, so let's pair some less common wines with that, maybe some just unusual varieties, things that you haven't had or maybe haven't had in a while or just maybe never heard of. So this past week's column in the New York Times, it's Eric Asimov's weekly column about wine and spirits, mainly wine, but spirits he covers as well. And this was 15 bottles under $15. So these are bottles that you're not necessarily going to find very easily. But one of them you can buy from a New York State winery because it was Standing Stones. And they're non-vintage red. Probably one of their least expensive wines. And it's a chance to have a dry red. It's made with some of the common Bordeaux grapes, including Petit Verdot, which you don't hear mentioned much in the Finger Lakes in general. Dr. Frank grows it. There's probably a couple of wineries that do, but not very many that I know of that have Petit Verdot growing. And some Cabernet. And then it also includes some Saporavi, which is something that Standing Stone grows quite a bit of. In fact, the article from Eric Asimov mentions that Standing Stone thinks it's the largest planting of Saporavi outside of the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. Yeah, 6.5 acres of Saporavi. Which is a very dark grape. I said last week, it's a black grape, so when you press it, it comes out with very red, dark juice. When you press Cabernet or press most of the other red grapes that you can think of, the skin is red, but the pulp of the grape is not, the juice is not. And so Saporavi gives you some really nice color, and nice to see it mentioned in the New York Times as one of those grapes that you should go in search of. And you know, it's chance to explore. And I think it was John McGregor from McGregor Vineyards sent their Saporavi, which is their Black Russian, is mainly Saporavi, to the former Soviet Republic of Georgia last year for a Saporavi competition. And I think won a gold medal for this Finger Lakes Saporavi in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, which that was kind of cool. And something that they've grown at McGregor Vineyards for decades. Their Black Russian was really the first cult wine of the, at least of the Finger Lakes. And really been around for a long time. And I think they were calling it a blend of Saporavi and Seraskaya. And then, as I recall talking to John a couple years ago, John McGregor, they discovered that the vineyard is actually mainly Saporavi. There isn't probably that much Seraskaya. It's over the years has died out to some degree. So the one of the reasons it's Black Russian is because it is so dark in color. And that's the Saporavi. So, again, inexpensive wine, $14.99, I think, and less if you buy it by the case. And a nice mention in the New York Times for them. And it's one of the things that Eric Asimov says. These are his words, some might seem strange, made with unfamiliar grapes, grown in unknown places. Finger Lakes isn't quite unknown, but he says, if you're looking for great values under $15, you will not find wines from exalted places that are in high demand, at least not good ones. Nor will you find wines that you can put away for years of aging, or that would serve as centerpieces for memorable occasions. These are not the complex epitomes that show the extent of a wine's potential. Many serve as introductions to a particular style. If you like them, you might consider someday exploring more deeply at higher cost. So some fabulous, inexpensive wines. And you can read about it in the New York Times. Their coronavirus coverage is free. Other than that, I think they have 10 articles a month or something that you can read for free. And Eric Asimov's come out once a week on Wednesdays. So there were a couple of sparkling wines in this list that he has. And the Akaba, and lists where he found them, all of these online, I think. And so the idea is that you can potentially order them, but I think he was finding them online at wine shops in New York City. Nice to maybe order, if you're going to order online from a wine shop, do it from a local one here, like Marketview maybe, and see what they have. Or obviously in the case of local wines directly from the winery, Standing Stone is owned by Herman J. Weimer. They purchased it 4 or 5 years ago now. Tom and Marty Mashinsky retired, and that has been kind of the way wineries have been purchased over the last couple of decades. The owners retire, and another winery in the Finger Lakes purchases the property. And in this case, one of the things they really wanted were the grapes, the vineyards, Standing Stone's vineyards, which includes some of the old Gold Seal vineyards. So there's some old vines in those vineyards of Standing Stone, I think Chardonnay in particular, that go back to the 1970s. But other wineries that have been sold, Chateau Lafayette Renault, the owners retired, Dick and Betty Reno, and that was purchased by Glenora. Doug and Susie Knapp retired from Knapp Vineyards many years ago, and Glenora also purchased that. so kept them as largely independent operations. But there haven't been really any outside purchases, at least not from other wineries from outside our area or from around the world. Rooster Hill was sold to someone from Philadelphia who's now spending more time here, and they actually owns not only Rooster Hill but also Torrey Ridge, also owned by that same person. So the it's still basically family-owned industry in the Finger Lakes and in Western New York. This morning, we're going to talk to Robin Ross from Arrowhead Spring Vineyards, just north of Lockport, in this hour. And the next hour, we'll talk with Peter Beecraft, the winemaker at Anthony Road Wine Company. They just came out with a bubbly, forced carbonation wine, sparkling wine. And so we'll get more details from Peter in the next hour. Right now, just a reminder that there are many restaurants that are doing takeout, and hopefully curbside service. The CDC finally, kind of reluctantly, it seems, certainly the federal government has been reluctant to encourage people to use face masks, but they are working in other parts of the world. We might as well learn from other parts of the world, it seems, when there's a pandemic going on that has hit other areas before it's hit us. And so I hope you'll consider wearing a mask. The when you wear a mask, it protects other people, just in case you may be infected or maybe infected and not have any symptoms, not even know it. And that encourages, hopefully, other people to wear masks that will, in turn, protect you. The 6 foot of distance is a minimum, and if someone is coughing or sneezing and things, then that 6 foot really isn't enough, especially if they're not wearing a mask. So be careful, wear a mask, stay home if possible, place your orders for wine online and or call the winery and they'll ship to you. And if we can stay home, we can flatten this curve. Unfortunately, as I said yesterday, we don't really know what the curve is because there's so little testing going on. We really have no idea. We are flying blind through this pandemic here in this country because there is virtually no testing. And testing's happening in hospitals, but most people are being told to go home and not given tests. And so we are flying blind. We don't know what this curve is. We can be pretty sure based on the deaths, which follow the onset of cases by weeks. We can be pretty certain following the deaths that there are far more cases than are being reported or being tested. So given all that uncertainty, stay home, use a mask if you have to go to the grocery store, but limit your trips, limit your errands drastically if possible, and we can get through this. The next week or so is going to be crucial. And again, this is a virus that many people don't know they have, and they don't know they need to protect other people. The data for the United States is largely, in my opinion, useless. If they're not testing, what does the number of cases tell us? Not very much. Unfortunately, it's the number of deaths that will tell us more. By the time those happen, again, weeks after those people contract the coronavirus, it is really almost too late to stop the spread of the infection. So stay home again for this week, and be very, very careful. And read up on it. Get more information about this. And as I've said numerous times, I believe the doctors and the nurses. I don't believe the politicians so much. They have their own agendas. I really don't think the nurses and the doctors have an agenda other than trying to save our lives and trying to stay sane, them in the hospitals. So, again, stay home, wear a mask if you have to go out. Plenty of places to go to find ways to produce your own and learn more about this. And one of the places you can order wine, have it shipped to your door from a local winery, is only an hour and a half west of Rochester, is Arrowhead Spring Vineyards. And Robin and Duncan Ross founded it a couple of decades ago, I guess at this point, and we'll get details. We have Robin Ross with us right now. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right, and thank you for taking some time on a Sunday morning to give us a call, and we'll talk about ordering wine and things like that. But what's the background on the winery? Why did you choose just north of Lockport when you and Duncan decided to open a winery?
Well, for several reasons, one of which is this is the area that I'm from. My family's from Youngstown, New York, but also because the Niagara-Scarpman area is a great region to grow grapes. It is a place where you can grow stone fruits over the years, like cherries and peaches, things that require a very forgiving climate. And because of that, we knew the grapes would do well here. It's probably the second warmest growing region in New York State, following Long Island, of course. And with Lake Ontario to the north of us, which acts as a really large heat sink, in fact, that lake never freezes over, we get a slightly extended fall time. So, for example, leaves stay on the vines here usually till just about Thanksgiving time. And then in the spring, we get protection from frost as well. That warm air rising over the lake will hit the cool air coming over the escarpment. And on days when there's a potential frost, the two air masses mixing together will cause wind to form, and that wind will prevent frost from frying the leaves generally. So it's just a great site to grow vinifera.
And if people have heard of the Niagara Escarpment, it's literally in your backyard, right? I mean, you're looking at the formation that goes up from your backyard.
Exactly. It's the same formation that's responsible, of course, for Niagara Falls, and it extends through Canada all the way to Wisconsin. But when we look from our new tasting room down to the south, we can see the rocks forming the wall, which are actually right behind our south vineyards. And then everything on our land slopes forward to the north. And from the winery, we can actually see the Toronto skyline because we're perched on the hillside. Western New York is more or less flat, and I think we're on the only hill that runs through it, as are several of our neighbors, of course, and along the ridge. But the interesting thing is that it gives us a really fantastic view, and kind of a funny side effect is that it's really hard to find a flat spot on the entire farm.
Well, and you get some maybe a sunrise or a sunset with the sun reflecting off the windows of the Toronto skyscrapers sometimes?
Yeah, so early morning when I get up, and I've lived on a farm growing up. In fact, I've always been an early riser. The Toronto skyline is just reflected generally in a nice pink color. It reminds me of that scene in Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz where she's standing on the poppy field and Emerald City's glowing out green. Of course, here it's Toronto glowing in a pink color out to the north. And then at nighttime, again, we'll see a nice view. During the day, oftentimes there'll be a haze, but some days are clear enough that you can see across and you can catch the skyline as well. But generally speaking, in the morning and the evening, you can see it.
That's amazing. The winery. When did you start planting grapes? When did you open the winery?
We started planting grapes on Mother's Day of 2006, and my kids used to like to joke that every Mother's Day we'd pick some really difficult physical task and assigned mom to it. So it was planting grapes in 2006, sitting on the back of a planter. And that year, we planted 8,000 vines, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Chardonnay, Syrah, and actually some Malbec. Now, the Malbec we don't have in anymore. That didn't do too well. But the other grapes we still have growing on that slope. And then by February of 2008, we opened the tasting room. We had licensed in between and were making wine with grapes brought in from local farms and even the Finger Lakes, which is roughly 2.5 hours from us. But by 2010, our own 2008 vintages were coming up in the tasting room, and we haven't looked back. We've been using estate grapes plus some local farms here within a 15-minute drive of our own place to provide some of the whites that we use.
Now, New York State, in general, is maybe absent Long Island, which has been known for Merlot, but New York's the upstate New York, Finger Lakes, western New York, perhaps best known for Riesling, and the reputation of dry reds has lagged behind the Riesling until fairly recently. But you and a number of other wineries in the Finger Lakes have really thrown it all in for dry reds, and now we're seeing that they're being recognized more widely. They've been excellent for quite a while, but kind of dismissed maybe. Is it the fact that you and Duncan just love dry reds, or do you just think that that's one of the best things to make from the vineyards there at Arrowhead Spring Vineyards?
Honestly, it's a little bit of both. We do love dry reds. Duncan drinks almost exclusively dry reds. Once in a while, I can talk him into a glass of Chardonnay or Viognier, but he's definitely a guy that likes a lot of red wine. For myself, in the summer, I enjoy whites and rosés as well as reds or lighter reds, like Pinot in the summer and heavier reds in the wintertime. But we had looked to the west of us before we started. And, of course, in western New York, our western border is Canada, and they have a Niagara Escarpment region, and we're successfully growing vinifera, dry reds, and making some nice wines. So we knew that it could be done, that the wines would survive in our climate. And then because our site is warm and has a long extended fall, and because our slopes face to the west, we get very long days of sunlight on the vines when they need them during ripening. Generally speaking, we can get our reds up to 24 bricks of sugar in the vineyard, and that just makes a nice dry at roughly 12% alcohol wine. Sometimes they get a little bit riper than that, and we can get those reds up to 13% on the alcohol. So that extended fall season, for example, it's not uncommon for us to harvest our Cabernet Franc and Cabernet Sauvignon the first week of November, and we still have full leaves in the vineyard. So they're still collecting sunlight. They're still doing some ripening, and then we finally take them at the very last moment.
And you've been expanding those vineyards, right? You've been planting more grapes the last several years?
We have. So in 2015, we decided to add Pinot Noir to our plantings and then more Cabernet Franc. You mentioned earlier in the conversation that red wines in New York are just starting to get noticed, and I think Cabernet Franc may very well end up being a grape that's going to do the best across the entire state. Several red varieties grow well in several of the regions, but I think Cabernet Franc grows well everywhere. I know in a lot of parts of the world, in California, for example, it's used as a blending grape, but it really shines in New York. The vine itself grows quite well. It's hardy. And we get some nice spicy characteristics out of it. And that's really the backbone of our vineyard. We have more Cabernet Franc planted than anything else. And then again, in 2016, we planted more Merlot, Cab Sauv, and some Tempranillo that we're experimenting with to see how that will do. Planting vines again this spring. So in the meantime, we've expanded our land. We've filled up the primary farm. There's 25 acres, and we're just every bit of land is used on the primary farm. But we've purchased another 23 acres just to the west of us. Our farms don't adjoin, but there's only one farm in between. And we'll be planting that this spring with some more varietal, putting a little bit more Syrah into the ground, some more Chardonnay, and trying Viognier for the first time. So that'll be interesting.
And you've just this last year opened a new Tasty Newman production facility. It's really raises the benchmark for Western New York wineries for just a gorgeous modern facility.
Well, thank you. Yes, we have. One of our keystones of our business is we've always focused on sustainability, whether in the vineyard or in the production facility. So, for example, in the vineyards, we don't use herbicide. We never have on our farms. We try to keep a limited spray on them. Of course, vines do require maintenance and spray, but we try to do a lot of what we call vineyard activities such as leaf thinning and hedging to keep the canopy free and open, and we get really good wind here. And we have a wind turbine that's been generating half of our power requirements for quite a long time. But when we built the new facility, we built it based on what we had learned in our previous smaller facility, and that was that if we build into the hillside for the production area, we don't need to heat or cool it. The ambient earth temperature being about 55 to 56 degrees Fahrenheit allows us to maintain a cellar temperature between 60 and 62 year-round without any intervention. So it's a huge savings on power and helps us with our sustainability program. And then we also installed geothermal heating, and we have it in our home and also in our winery facility. So because we have land, we have plenty of room to put the loops that are required for cooling of the water that goes through the glycol-treated water that goes through the whole system, and that keeps our energy costs down. In fact, it keeps us quite green. We only use electrical energy here. And then in the new facility, we put in all LED lighting to further add to a reduced use on the power grid. And it's a timber frame, and it has 10-inch foam ceiling panels, roofing panels, to help mitigate any heat escape or loss, and also to keep it cool in the summer, and then 6-inch the panel walls to keep the building nice and cool, or in the converse, very warm in the winter so that we don't have to add too much heating or cooling to it.
And the timber frame structure just seems to fit with the land, too.
It does, and it gives a nice open feeling. The building has, on the lower level where we do our production, it allows us to have a 3,000-square-foot barrel room, and those cellars are 13 feet deep, so we have quite a bit of barrels piled one atop the other to make use of the space for barrel aging our reds. Most of them age in oak for up to 2 years. But then we have another 4,000 square feet for the regular production and a nice crush pad that's protected by the earth walls on two sides and the big overhead door into the facility on a third, leaving one open for bringing in grapes and doing our crush and press. Upstairs, that gave us a 4,000-square-foot wing that we could use for events like weddings or dinners, or even for overflow on a busy weekend with tables set up for people to enjoy a glass of wine. And that's in the timber frame area with soaring ceilings. Looks like an old barn on the inside. Yeah. And the other wing, 3,000 square feet, we have our regular tasting room that's open year-round. And it's just a nice, roomy space where we really don't have to be, people deep at the bar, for example, when we're allowed to, of course, do tastings and buy the glass service again. But it's a nice, roomy, airy space, and it has a very nice patio off the back where people can enjoy a glass of wine when that is allowed to happen in New York State again and have a nice view of the vineyard. We're very happy with the facility.
And your previous tasting room was lovely. It was small. You needed more space.
It was. It was less than 1,000 square feet on the floor that we used as tasting room. And oftentimes it would, in the summertime it could be quite crowded and we'd have to turn people away. And we did have a picnic area outside, but if we had a large vehicle or like a bus or a limo come up, they had to turn around in that area to get back out, and oftentimes they park there, and we always thought, well, that's kind of unpleasant for the people sitting at tables to have a view of a vehicle right there. So then this moving to a bigger spot with a large parking lot eliminated that problem. There's no vehicles anywhere near now where the patio is. It's on the other side of the building, and it just gives it a nice sense of tranquility.
And did you find any arrowheads in your construction project? Because I think you said you found them over the years as you planted vineyards.
Yeah, we found them over the years in the vineyards, but unfortunately none during the construction. The last arrowhead found was kind of a funny story. To go back years ago when we first put vines in, my children were young. I mean, this was back in 2006, and it was a lot of hard work, and the vines had to be hand-hoed around. And my daughter at that time was 11 years old, and she was out there hand-hoeing along with her brothers, who might have been like 13 and 14. And it was not a job kids like to do around 8,000
no.
vines, but that's the luck of the draw when you're a farm kid. And so to make it a little bit more interesting, Duncan and I told them, you know, if you find an arrowhead while you're out hoeing in the vines, then you can have the next day off. That'll be, so it kind of made it a little bit of fun looking for an arrowhead. So my daughter, who was 11 at the time, at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, found an arrowhead. And her older brothers told her, listen, Grace, don't show Mom that arrowhead today. Tomorrow morning, just drop it out of your pocket first thing in the morning, because if you tell her today, you're only going to get a few minutes off the day. But if you tell her tomorrow, you'll get an entire day. And, of course, she was so honest, she came in and said she had found the arrowhead, and I kind of laughed and said, no, that would have deserved a full day either way. So she got a day off, and a lesson that, you know, honesty is always the best policy. But
yes.
To go forward several years, we planted more vines in 2016, and by then she was, of course, 21 years old. And of all things to happen, our cultivation equipment broke. Since we don't use herbicide, we were down to having to hand hoe, which is something we got away from over the years. We bought cultivation equipment under vine cultivators, but in farming, things break, and that's what happened. So we were back out there with hand hoes, and she was out there helping out, and she found an arrowhead. And she immediately phoned me and said, hey, Mom, does that mean I get a day off with hay again? So that was kind of funny all those years later.
That's right. And the arrowheads are... they're part of the history of the land. It's kind of fun to find them, I think, and it's obviously a part of the name of the winery too.
Yeah, they are. In fact, our site where we have the farm, we learned that years ago when the Route 93, which is our winery is on Route 93 between Upper and Lower Mountain Road in the Lockport, Cambria area, and when Route 93 was put in, arrowheads were found during the dig. And there's a law in New York State where if you find artifacts and you're doing something involving public funds, you have to stop and have a site dig. So the University of Buffalo's Department of Archaeology came out and they did a site dig, and several feet below the ground, and I think the professor, Doug Pirelli, told me it was something like 10 or 12 feet below ground, they found remains of a fire pit that they carbon dated, and I think it was 2000 BC where they placed it, that this would have been a tool making site. And it was an interesting lesson for me, because I hadn't realized or really thought about that over the years soil builds up. When archaeologists are discovering old civilizations and things, of course they're always under layers of soil. And of course that was the same thing here. That site is below where the road is and where our driveway is now. There's no longer a sign marking it. I was told that there was a sign in the late 70s, early 80s, but people would stop their cars and try digging. And, of course, they wouldn't find anything because the site was so far below, but also it was causing damage along the roadside, so the sign was removed.
Right. And it's not easy to dig a 10 or 15-foot deep hole. So.
No, and along a state road, it can really wreak havoc with the road crews when they're trying to keep the grass mowed along the road. You can imagine dropping a tractor wheel into even a foot, a hole a foot deep would potentially cause a dangerous situation for a driver on a sloped surface. So that sign was
the arrowheads make a really iconic label for Arrowhead Spring Vineyards, and you use a variety of arrowheads on those labels, not just one, but different styles of arrowheads.
We do, and depending on how the label looks on the bottle, so for Chardonnay and Syrah and Pinot Noir, which have a wider Burgundy-style bottle, they get I think that would be more like a Clovis Point, a wider-type arrowhead. And then our long Bordeaux-shaped bottles get a spear-type point, and then some of those are stylized. The Cool Terroirs, the label's all black and white, and it sort of reminds me of those Art Deco posters where everything's sort of geometric. Kind of a nice look on the bottle.
That's very cool. People can go to arrowheadspringvineyards.com and see the bottles and the different types of wine. And you have many varietals, but also you do the terroir you mentioned, which is a dry red blend, and your Arrowhead red. So two different blends, and how are those different?
So the Arrowhead red we do is a blend of Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and Cabernet Sauvignon. And although those same three grapes appear in our Meritage Reserve, they're different barrels. We have an assemblage meeting when we're ready to bottle a vintage. And the Cool Terroir, the difference between that and the two other blends is it has the addition of Syrah for a nice peppery note. But during that meeting, we'll taste through every barrel in the vintage. And it's quite a bit of labor. I mean, it sounds like a lot of fun, and I guess it starts out that way. But by the time you've had your 50th sip of the day, and of course anyone that's tasting at the assemblage meeting doesn't swallow the wine, they just sip it and then spit it out. We take intense notes on flavor, color, etc. At the end of the day, Duncan and the winemaking team get together and start talking about how the blends are going to be. So as we're choosing barrels, we'll say, well, that particular barrel of Merlot or that barrel of Cabernet Franc showed really strong fruit characteristics. We tend to focus those wines into the Arrowhead red so that that's a wine that's popular in the Buffalo region at many local bars, and it's a wine that you may not necessarily have to have food with. You might just have a dry red, you know, glass of wine to sit and sip, and it doesn't have as much tannic impact as the Meritage Reserve, which has more structure and more tannin, and we might prefer to pair that one with food. The Cool Terroir, like the Arrowhead Red, has some nice fruit characteristics, but it has that additional note of white peppers that we get off the Syrah that we grow here. And it's just such a nice bit of spice. I enjoy it by the glass alone, but also, I have to say, with a New York strip steak done on the grill with salt and pepper, and it's getting to be that season again.
You can fire up the grill today.
I know. It looks beautiful out there right now. It looks like sunshine.
Robin Ross is with us from Arrowhead Spring Vineyards, and you posted some photos earlier this winter of picking ice wine grapes, which you do the traditional way when they freeze out on the vine.
Yeah.
And you have Vidal Blanc ice wine that they make a lot of that in Canada right across the river from you, and there's a fair amount of ice wine in the Finger Lakes, too. How long have you made the ice wine, and
we've made ice wine since we started the winery. That was one of the first things we did. Initially, we kept a commercial license, and the first year we brought juice in from Canada. So in Canada, they would pick under very strict conditions, and then you would immediately go pick up the unfermented juice right after it was pressed, bring it back over, and do the fermentation. Then a couple of years later, we started leasing a vineyard that had Vidal Blanc. So from that point forward, we used our own grapes. I no longer lease that vineyard, so last year Duncan and I discussed it, and he said, well, why don't we try making it out of Cab Franc? We can do ice wine out of Cab Franc. That's not uncommon. So in probably around August time, we selected a row of Cab Franc that looked quite nice, and we put netting over the grapes, and that was to prevent them being eaten by birds and old coyotes and raccoons and everything else that's looking for an easy meal in the fall. And we kept them netted, and then finally in January, we had a very cold day, and we went out there and picked the grapes. You know, now that I say January, I'm not sure if it was January or the beginning of February. It's all kind of a blur, but we waited until the conditions were perfect. The weather was quite cold. I think it was the first week of February. The temperatures dipped down, and we started out picking. It was 8 degrees Fahrenheit, and the high that day was 16 degrees Fahrenheit. So we picked that entire row of Cabernet Franc, and immediately hand-pressed it outside. And I think you'll probably see a couple pictures of Molly Belargin, who works here, sitting on the cake. It's been on our Facebook post, but she likes to pose on top of the cake of frozen grapes, and it was just a really cute picture at the end of a very long day of hard work. Pressing those frozen grapes in our basket press is quite a bit of work. We do have a large bladder press for production time that can take quite a bit of tonnage, but it doesn't work as well on a smaller amount, so we like to do that by hand.
And you're pressing rocks, basically. I mean, it's they're frozen grapes, and spending that much time at those temperatures, does it make you wonder whether you really should make ice wine? I mean, it's a challenge to do.
I have to admit that was something I thought about this year, especially the difference between picking Vidal Blanc, which has a very large berry. So when we used to make it out of Vidal Blanc, the clusters are quite a bit larger, and it didn't take as long to pick the grapes, and it was easier to press them, even though they were hard marbles, you know, frozen. There was more, if you pick them in the fall, for example, there's more matter inside and more juice to the outside skin. But the Cabernet Franc berry is actually quite small, so it took a lot more clusters of Cabernet Franc to produce juice. There's not as much inside each individual berry. And I did wonder to myself why I had set myself up for such hard work. I think in the future we may choose a different varietal and maybe plant something specifically. But in the meantime, we grow a lot of Cabernet Franc, and will be turned into a Cabernet Franc ice wine. In fact, it's down in the cellars now. It's nearly done. It's done with the fermentation, but it'll take, we age ours on the yeast lee for at least a year to make sure that the ice wine itself has a very fruit intense flavor rather than a cotton candy kind of flavor that ice wine can get.
Yeah, so we'll look forward to that one a few years from now.
Right, me too.
The Cabernet Franc. A couple of things. One, obviously you're not doing tastings and things now, but you can ship wines, and you're open for bottle sales in the afternoons?
Yes. And in both our shipping and in the tasting room, we're offering significant discounts. The case of wine, we're offering a 25% discount. It can be a mix-and-match case. With the six-pack of wine, 6 to 11 bottles, a 15%, and for any three bottles, a 10% discount. And then in the tasting room as well, we're doing a program with a local distillery and other wineries and grape growers in the area where we've donated, the grape growers have donated some grapes. We've donated, in our case, we had a local grape grower that had a huge crop of Riesling. So back in the fall, we helped them harvest it, and they weren't able to sell all their grapes. So we said, well, we'll turn it into wine, and perhaps we can sell some bulk, you know, wine and help you earn some money on the grapes. They called us and said, you know what, with this going on, can we just take some of that bulk wine that was produced and between the two of us just donate it to a distillery to be distilled down for sanitizer, for hand sanitizer. So we have donated, it was 600 gallons of wine at this point to Niagara Craft Spirits. They've turned it into a distillate and created the hand sanitizer, and we have that available for free in the tasting room right now. Local people have been coming up. We limit it to 6 ounces per person, but we're offering that, as well as we have wine for sale, and we're open from 2 to 6 daily.
And 6 ounces will last a person a little while. It's it goes a long ways. And the distilleries around Rochester also making hand sanitizer, and it really speeds up the process. So we interviewed Chris Carlson last weekend about it. When a distillery or whoever's making the hand sanitizer can use wine instead of having to ferment sugar, as the fermentation process takes days, and so it speeds up the production tremendously when wineries like you donate some wine. That allows the production to go much faster, and that makes a big difference right now because it's so hard to find. So that's
I think it's important. We're all trying to do our part. And as wineries, we're not on the front lines like doctors and nurses, but we are farms, and we've been allowed to stay open, and we appreciate it. And we also know that in a rural area like ours, people have to drive a ways to get to a store, and they may not find the products that they need. So if we can help out in any way, and that includes by having hand sanitizer available. I've had people in yesterday, for example, they weren't here to buy wine, but they were here to pick up sanitizer. The gentleman was a trucker, and the lady was doing personal grocery shopping for elderly people that can't get out, and just really appreciated that they could keep themselves as healthy as possible during these difficult times.
Yeah. So it's 2 to 6, 7 days a week right now that you're open?
Yes. And we'll take, of course, through our website, people can shop as well, and then we just ship the wine directly to them.
And what about the Case Club? People who want to get to know the winery better, and you know, you can be a part of a winery without investing the money of ownership and be a part of a Case Club.
Right, and we have a monthly subscription at two levels, the standard for $49 a month and the premium for $79 a month. The standard includes three bottles of our choice, a mix of red and white, and the premium is always three reds, generally includes something special out of the library. The wines are always at least of the value posted in the price of the monthly club membership, and our club members also enjoy a 40% discount on any case of wine that they purchase. And then they also get three glasses of wine to enjoy per month at the winery. Right now, because we can't offer the Case Club meetings, we generally have a Case Club event every month, the second Thursday of the month, and that involves having wine and food pairings, which is for our Case Club member and a guest with no cost to them. And then they, of course, they can enjoy their glasses of wine. But we can't do that right now. So for this next month in April, if the social distancing hasn't been lifted, we will just send an extra bottle of wine in with to the Case Club members that come out for pickup. So we're trying to, you know, keep our Case Club members interested. They're certainly a big backbone of our business, and we very much appreciate our customers. Even any customer that comes in or orders over the website, we really appreciate it. It helps us keep our staff employed and through these really difficult times.
Yeah, and other people get gift cards and gift certificates from restaurants, from other small businesses. It doesn't need to be a big amount of money. You notice each one of those, and it's a way to reach out and let them know that you are thinking about them. And and one of the things Arrowhead Spring Vineyards, at least in my mind, is really known for is your border collie Ian.
Yes.
How is he doing?
He's doing great, but it's been a little bit of an adjustment for him because he's used to coming out and visiting with lots of people every day. And
exactly.
People coming in. But the nice thing is that dogs don't appear to have any issue with this particular virus. And, of course, he's got a very nice rough coat, so he's safe to pet him. And he's still in the tasting room working every day from 2 to 6. And he loves people. He loves them. And the rest of the time he's out on the farm, sometimes people will comment lately, boy, he's just sleeping. He's showing his age, and I have to remind people that Ian gets up with me at 4:30 or 5 in the morning, and he's been outside for several hours working hard, you know, keeping staff entertained before he comes into the building. But he's still here.
Keeping groundhogs off the property and is he
squirrels up in the trees, that kind of important thing.
Yes, exactly. We have a part border collie who is also fond of chasing the squirrels, keeping them from invading our house. But Ian, better than almost any dog I've run into, is so polite about bringing a ball or a frisbee and just setting at your feet. Some dogs will sort of push it at you, push it into your leg, and you know, try to get you to throw it. And he just sets it down and then looks up at you, and so polite.
He's pretty good. He's got a beseeching look, and we've noticed over the years he's good with any age bracket. We've had little tiny toddlers just learning how to walk, toss the ball, and he's very careful. He's never knocked anyone over or pulled too hard. You know, on, for example, we've elderly people come in, and he's never knocked anyone over or pulled too hard. You're right. He's a very polite dog. We were very lucky with him.
Yeah, adorable. And one of the fixtures there at Arrowhead Spring Vineyards. But I was thinking, you know, with fewer people visiting, that he's not used to it. It's part of what he loves about being at the winery are the people.
Yes, I'm hoping that by summertime, when things are better and it's healthier for us to interact again, that people will be able to come out and enjoy a glass of wine outside, and he'll be out there with his frisbee. His big game in the summer is frisbee, and in the wintertime it's a ball in the tasting room. But none of us know when that'll happen, but we're looking forward to seeing people again whenever it appears to be safe.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, you are shipping wine, and again, reds and whites, but but the reds like the Syrah, beautiful on a cool, maybe one of some of the last fires of the season, as the cool spring weather will turn warm here eventually. Well, Robin, thank you very much for all your time this morning, and good luck to you and Duncan and Ian and the rest of the crew there at Arrowhead Spring Vineyards.
Thanks so much for having us on the show. We really appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Robin Ross. She and her husband Duncan are the owners of Arrowhead Spring Vineyards, and it is an hour and a half west of Rochester, just north of Lockport. As she said at the start of the interview, right next to the Niagara Escarpment, and really the stunning tasting room. You can see photos of it, nice sort of drone view of the new production facility and tasting room, the vineyard. You can see their house and you can see how small in comparison their former tasting room was, which is right next to the house. The house is on the right. The tasting room, or former tasting room, is on the left. The new facility down toward the kind of the left-hand corner of the photo. So arrowheadspringvineyards.com. You can get more details. We'll take a quick break. Be back after word from our sponsors on WYSL 1040.
Down the road here from me, there's an old holly tree where you lay down a dollar or two. Go on around the bend, come back again. There's a jug full of that good old Mountain Dew.
Oh, they call it that good old Mountain Dew, and them that refuse it are few.
Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here, the sponsors of The Grapevine, and some places for you to connect with, perhaps online for the moment, with ordering wine. And you can also get gift cards, gift certificates to restaurants. Some of them are doing takeout. Ristorante Lucano is offering takeout. And if you do that, I would get multiple dishes, put them in the number of them in the freezer, and you'll have quite a few meals. I've got three more entree-size portions of lasagna to go in our freezer from Ristorante Lucano. It's ristorantelucano.com, East Avenue and Winton. And you can get those gift cards online if you want to support them and maybe use it as a thank you for someone, or use it yourself in the near future when they reopen for dining. But it is takeout available at Ristorante Lucano. And because restaurants are allowed to offer wine and beer and cocktails too, I think, they have a fabulous selection of Italian wine at Ristorante Lucano. So maybe do some exploring of Italian wine. They are offering a discount on the wine purchases, and get some advice from them on which wines you might want to experiment with. And if you don't know a lot about Italian wine, they're ideal people to talk to about that. RistoranteLucano.com for more details. Also brought to you by Eagle Crest Vineyards. Willoline from Eagle Crest Vineyards, our owner winemaker, has been working on preserving the history of the winery, which goes back to 1872. Bishop McQuaid founded it to make altar wine back then. And they continue to make altar wine, but also, of course, table wines, some delicious Rieslings, Chardonnay, Cabernet Franc, or Anouk Chardonnay, many other wines for you to try. It's EagleCrestVineyards.com, right now open on Saturdays if you want to pick up bottles of wine, they'll also ship them to you. And they've been looking forward as well, not just trying to preserve the history of the winery, but also renewable energy has been very important to them. They were early in the adoption of solar power for wineries in the Finger Lakes, and have a large solar array right out in the field next to the winery. It's EagleCrestVineyards.com for more details. Again, right near Hemlock Lake, just southeast of Rochester. And finally, brought to you by Gallia's Tropical Greenhouse and Florist. They're in Pittsford, the corner of Jefferson and Clover, and are doing curbside pickup. If you want to get some violas and pansies or maybe cut flowers, you can call them. They also are delivering mulch, potting soil, topsoil, whatever you might need to work on some gardening projects around your yard. It's Gallias.com, G-A-L-L-E-A-S, in the corner of Jefferson and Clover. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on The Grapevine.
Here we sit enjoying the shade.
Hey, brother, pour the wine.
Drink the drink that I have made.
Hey, brother, pour the wine.
Tell you why the day is sunny. I'm in love with lips of honey. Will you see the way she walks? Hey, brother, pour the wine.
Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's The Grapevine on WISL 1040, 92.1 FM. And you should consider planting some seeds right now. It's a little bit early to plant most vegetables and things. We have quite a few nights of right around freezing close to it. And so putting transplants in at this point is a bit risky. But seeds are really ideal. And Fruition Seeds in Naples has a really nice selection, and it's a really perfect time to put in the seeds for Swiss chard and kale and radishes and peas, broccoli, a lot of these things like the cool weather, and Mother Nature will tell them when to germinate. So if you are anxious to do some planting, consider ordering some seeds. You'll get them in a few days. And fruitionseeds.com. So I've got a bunch of seeds in the ground, not really growing. I have a few that I brought or that I put in actually little takeout containers and growing them inside. And a few of those are just starting to germinate. And it's a nice way to have spring come inside with the seeds you start inside. But a lot of them can be started directly out in the garden. So it's going to be some pretty moderate weather this week in the 50s, and really nice to get out and do some work in the garden. I've got some pruning of my grapevines to do. I saw some wineries and New Vines, which is a bed and breakfast, but also has an acre of vineyards. They were just finished tying up their vines, and I essentially need to do the same thing with my grapes, which are mostly Niagara grapes. In my backyard from a previous homeowner. They provide some nice shade and some great food for the possums and raccoons. And occasionally we get some also. They just smell good. I love having those outside. So I've got some more work to do on those, some more pruning to do on some apple trees, although I kind of want to let them bloom before I cut too many buds off. And it's great to be able to get outside and do some work in the garden, do some weeding, and get our gardens, our yards ready for spring. We'll be back in the next hour with hour number two of The Grapevine. We'll talk to Peter Beecraft, a winemaker at Anthony Road Wine Company. They just released a forced carbonation sparkling wine, and can't wait to find out more details about it. And like Arrowhead Spring Vineyards and Eagle Crest Vineyards and really many of the wineries from around New York State, they will ship wine to you. So we'll get more details on the variety of wines that are available right now at Anthony Road. They also do skin-fermented wines, quite a few of those, and many others for you to try. So we'll have Peter Beecraft on the next hour number two of The Grapevine here on WISL 1040.